see. They never wanted me. The curse is laid upon my race. Useless serpents, they bring disgrace. A man without a face. Time they pass again. It's so hard to tell where and when. Yeah, just do the best you can. The flames will burn away the waste. All the lies that they told erased. A man without face. A man without a 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 face.
Welcome, dear ladies and gentlemen, to the Rabbit Hole Radio Show with your host, David James. Welcome, dear kinswomen, dear kinsmen. Welcome to hell, as I've been saying lately. Yes, there's a communist revolution going on in America right now. I mean, it's always been a soft communist revolution, but now the excrement is hitting the fan. It's amazing to see that everybody, now that the Trump card has been played, everybody is showing their cards, including the corporations, the politicians, just everybody you can think about, the musicians, the Hollywood idiots. Everyone is showing their cards. They're no longer trying to put off a facade that the world is a nice place that is out for our general well-being. The time of that farce is absolutely over with now. It's interesting that the federal government wants us to obey them, but they're encouraging the blacks not to obey. You see, they only want white people to obey them. They don't. Isn't it interesting? It's, you know, it's laughable. There's no credibility in this federal government. This federal meaning communist or communism. Now, I just did a fireside chat that was probably the best show I've ever done as far as I'm concerned. I don't know what. There have been people that commented, you know, and I think you should listen to it. Fireside Chat 69. The past couple of weeks' shows have been pretty much full of revelation, full of revealings. And as I've been out there looking, there's more and more people bowing their knee to Baal and his system. His worldly system. It's just astounding to see what's really going on. You know, another thing that I don't know if I mentioned, but they deliberately let out all kinds of criminal blacks out of prison under the guise of the COVID-19 thing, which is absolutely stupid. Because as I told you, get this, right? They're telling us all to stay in our houses, right? But they're all locked up in their house, the jail, and they want to let them out. See, that doesn't make any sense. We know now why they let them out, don't we? We know that they let them out so that they could participate in rape and kill, rob, steal, murder, and do everything else they always do. Isn't that interesting how convenient that was? That they let them out of prison, let Jews out of prison under the guise of, oh, it's COVID-19, we got to let them out. Now you see why they let them out. Now you know the purpose. And then when they do these things, they expect you to follow their rules to the T. It ain't going to happen. They are losing credibility on a daily basis. What really amazes me is there's people out, I'm watching Gab here and there and finding some great pictures and things and making comments. Many people don't even know that George Soros is a Jew. Many people don't know that this mayor or whatever, this Jewish mayor of, they just don't know that these people are Jews. They think they're white people. And when you tell them they're Jews, some just don't make any comment. Other people get violent because they're actually Jews. There's a lot of fake accounts, of course, and you can bring them right out of the woodwork real quickly. I noticed one thing about Jews is that when you tell them, when you reveal that somebody they don't want you to know is a Jew, you do that, they get angry and they might spout off at the mouth. But then you show them a picture like on the front page of DavidJamesBossa.com right now, where it shows the devil and the happy merchant, and the devil's reading the Bible. You got to check it out. And he says, hey, little sonny boy of mine or whatever. He says, I'm reading about you in the Bible. And, that's what the Jews are, you know, right next to him. And he's like, what you reading, daddy? It's a classic picture. I don't know who made it, but it's one of the finest, and so I had to put it right up on the site. Get a load of it, because it's one of the finest pictures I've ever seen for this type of a thing. So that's what's going on in our world. And I think they're pulling out all the stops right now because they know the game is really, it's to the point where I will say one thing, that there's a lot of people finding out about the Jews, even though of what I just said, there's a lot of people that still don't know. It's amazing. So we're in the book, The Red Network. I wanted to mention it. I'll try to mention it again tomorrow on Saxon's Creed. Is when I put up last week's Saxon's Creed, I told you it was episode 1, season 1. Of the Rifleman. And what happened was, whoever, made those videos that whole season, I downloaded the whole season, and without realizing it, when I just clicked on the first video, it's really episode 20. So it's season 1, episode 20. And I also put a link to that video under last week's Saxon's Creed so you can watch it. I suggest you do. Sorry for the debacle or the mistake, but I didn't know at the time. All I did was click on the first video. When I went back to look at it, I said, oh, because you know what happened was I went online for a second to see episode 1, season 1, episode 1. I'm going, this isn't the one. So I went back to my folder and I said, oh, I see. So I have to fix it. See, sometimes people do things and it causes the order of things to change in the folders. So it's because of maybe an error, a left out letter, or they named it different or something like that. Sorry about that. So we're in the Red Network. We're on page 44. It was right at the end of 43. Jail or asylum for me, suggests Liberal Mondale. The September 1933 issue of the communist magazine Anti-Fascist Action. Did you just hear that? I just realized that as I'm reading it. Who are the anti-fascist action people today? Why, Antifa. Let me read the sentence again. You'll get why I just said this. The September 1933 issue of the communist magazine Anti-Fascist Action. Now, do you know why the Jews support Antifa? Published by the Chicago Committee to Aid Victims of German Fascism of the communist WIR, contains, in addition to material by communist authors, a section headed Correspondence, which invites the true expression of workers everywhere, quote unquote, and says, here is the space. Voice your indignation, your protest, etc. To quote, the following letter comes from Lester Mondale, Evanston, who takes this opportunity to answer a worker who had written him asking, how is it possible for Mrs., a notorious red-baiter, to insult every worker in this country calling them gutter adherents without being thrown into prison or an insane asylum? Dear Frank, you ask, how is it possible that this woman can insult every honest wage worker in this country without being thrown in a prison or insane asylum? Permit me to tell you how it is possible for these respectable women to insult you and get away with it. My answer will sound stranger than fiction. But Frank, the reason it sounds strange is that you have been fed up on the lies you read every day in the newspapers and the lies you were taught in the public schools. Lies about every American being born free and equal to the richest. The lady you speak of is a well-known North Shore patriot. She speaks before fashionable churches. The Legionnaires admire her. The DAR ladies introduce her at speaking engagements. Now, Frank, there is a man in Chicago, another patriot, who has an organization for spying on communists and liberals, who also speaks before churches, Legionnaires, and DAR conventions. This man is a great friend of the lady who insulted the working men. In fact, Frank, this lady and this man more often than not are seen together in public gatherings, and the style of her anti-red pamphlets strikingly resemble the style of the report sent out by his spy organization. One sentence will explain why they insult you, Frank. This man I speak of was for years a professional strikebreaker in the clay products industries. Do you see the connection now? By pretending to be super patriots, these people can break up the working man's unions, keep him in poverty, and call all liberals like myself un-American communists, because we would like to see these ladies get a little less of the country's income and the honest workers like yourself get your just share. What a con job that is, huh? To these respectable ladies, you are a gutter adherent. To them, the wife you love stinks of the gutter. To them, the babies you bring into the world are rats of the gutter, and they can use the gutters whenever the super patriots haven't parked their Packards for their playgrounds. You gutter people should be glad to kiss the hands of the wealthy for their willingness to be compelled to pay enough in taxes to keep you starving to death. Isn't it interesting what a crock of crap this is? Communism is what starves people to death. What a load of crap this commie's answer is. Unbelievable. Keep you starving to death on the installment plan on the dole. You gutter people should be glad to get a $15 a week minimum wage and to starve and freeze through life while the government dumps wheat in China, plows under the cotton crops, closes coal mines, and slaughters hogs. You gutter people who complain of if the Citizens Committee, whose own children go to private schools, destroy the public schools with their economies, when thousands of contractors would be willing to give up new buildings and thousands of unemployed teachers would gladly teach your gutter children. You who complain are troublemakers, un-American. You and I know, Frank, just remember this is a commie speaking, right? You and I know, Frank, that the gutter people of New York and New England make the rulers of Cincinnati and Cleveland, that the gutter people of Europe and Ohio made the rulers present day in Chicago, that the gutter people of Indiana and Illinois made the pioneers of the Great West. But Frank, now there is no West where you can show the world the fight there is in you. Now you must not complain. You must not demonstrate. You must not strike. To do so would be to disturb the peace and be un-American. You stay where you are, in the gutter. But Frank, I have been a gutter person myself. I know that you have the intelligence not to be fooled for long by the lies of the insulting patriots and their schools and their newspapers. Your fellow workers in Germany were not fooled. They saw the German patriots grinding the life out of the working men. Can you imagine what a lie? These lying pieces of garbage. Lying pieces of garbage. Yeah, we got to mention Hitler. Yeah. Since I, too, may be besieged by red workers asking my help and advice, I now take this opportunity to answer a red who may write to me. Dear red worker, you ask me why Reverend so-and-so puts on such a show of sympathy for the communist cause and of hatred for its enemies, while at the same time he himself does not come out and stand by your side as an avowed comrade. You want to know why he calls himself a liberal instead of a communist? I will explain this to you, Red. You see, Reverend so-and-so has a much better education than you have, and he likes North Shore bourgeois comforts. The title of Reverend and income from capitalistic sources, and he does not want to lose these nor risk his head in red demonstrations, nor to spend his time in smelly jails with you. Don't you see how much safer it is for him to peek out from behind the skirts of respectability to sick on you and to do the dirty work? In that way, he gets the thrill without paying the bill. After the revolution is over, of course, I shan't blame you. Red, if you do with this kind just what your brothers in Russia did after the revolution, they made truces with some of their outright czarist enemies, but they cleaned out as much of the bourgeois trash and yellow little professors and ministers who had tried to play both sides and were true to neither, especially when it came to making sacrifices. This was right. One cannot depend on a man who is not loyal to his colors, be they red or white. Mike Gold has the right idea. In his Communist Daily Worker column, October 24, 1933, he says of these armchair warriors, "One of the basic dangers has been that these intellectuals come into the movement bringing a great deal of worthless bourgeois baggage in their minds and trying to sell this junk to the movement. They sometimes demand positions of leadership and try to revise and pervert the proletarian character of the communist movement. One of the most amazing sights to me has been to watch some of the recent recruits to Marxism around New York. Their progress is sometimes as rapid and humorous as that of old Keystone Comedy. On May 1st, hello, May Day, Communist Day, Maypole Day. On May 1st, they suddenly discover the proletarian revolution. It had been present in the world for over 60 years, but the boys shout and whoop as though they were original Columbuses. But the next May Day, these heroes have been completely disillusioned. Now they have a whole new program for communism, and they share the betrayed feeling of a Trotsky. Really, it is no wonder intellectuals get a bad name. The worker earns his communism and the right to make mistakes by hard and dangerous experience. Do these intellectuals really earn their right to criticize? They know nothing, actually nothing, of the revolutionary practice. It is all in their heads. The next day, he took another crack at them, saying, "The truth for which one is ready to die, more dreadful, the truth for which one is ready to go ragged and poor. This really is the integrity that the vacillating Stuart chases cannot permit themselves to see or announce. This is the true luxury of integrity, the guts to speak out and say capitalism is dead, long live communism." Let me just take a sip of water there. Thank you. "One cannot dispute Reverend so-and-so's statement that he belongs in the gutter. But if I felt about communism as he says he feels, I would quit peddling the opium of religion, as Marx calls it, from a bourgeois North Shore pulpit and call myself a communist, not a liberal. But wasn't it kind of cute and detective-like? I've never seen that word, detective-like, for him to find out all by himself that a big strong man is seen with me more often than not. Of course, he only infers, you know. Wouldn't he be surprised if he could see the door close on that man and me night after night when he brings me home? He has stayed with me for 15 years, and while law and engineering are supposed to be his professions, still he does break spinach eating and neck washing strikes on the part of our children. Like the rotten bourgeois that I am, I bear his name. But what's in a name when one is facing at best the penitentiary or asylum as I am? You know, and this is her speaking about herself, you know what I mean? On the door of the ACLU Chicago headquarters, room 611, 160 North LaSalle Street, of which Reverend So-and-so and Carl Hessler are both members, is printed Institute for Mortuary Research, the director Carl Hessler, Federated Press, etc. What did I tell you about the word federated? Of course, communist. Do you not see the connection, Red? While Hessler capably runs the communist Federated Press, get it? And teaches leaders for Red Revolution at the Communist Workers' School, his and Reverend So-and-so's ACLU committee in his office defend his pupils when they participate in little riot practice skirmishes. Practice skirmishes. Now, let me just stop and say something. On my BitChute channel, I showed how they were teaching the children in Israel how to do these skirmishes. They were practicing demonstrating. These were young children. And the way people were looking at it is they were rebelling against their own people, but they didn't understand this is a drill. This is how they teach them from young children, or wait a minute, young kids, goats, how to do this, how to, see what I mean? They participate in little riot practice skirmishes. They practice these things. But with the Institute for Mortuary Research under the same capable Hessler direction, how can people like me have a hope of asylum or penitentiary after the revolution? Yours until I clasp a white lily, White's Lily, Mrs. A.W. Dilling. Who are they? Those who read newspapers these days without some knowledge of Red propaganda and its propagandists miss much of the significance of what they read. Lectures, forums, and debates advertised in such a way to make it appear that they are impartial educational entertainments of general public interest are the mediums constantly used for subversive propaganda among the intelligentsia. The mediums. Get it? The media is a medium. Let's look up the word medium. And we're not talking about size. Okay, let's. An agency or means of doing something. Let's see if we can find something that's a little more apropos. A middle condition or degree. A substance regarded as the means of transmission. Air is the medium that conveys sound. But we know what a medium is. Listen, here it is. A channel or system of communication. A channel, somebody who's channeling. A channel or system of communication. That's a medium. It's like, somebody that's in between two, that's communicating between two people or more. You know what I mean? Like Christ is the one mediator between Yahweh and man. Mediator. But he's not a medium. See, a medium is, they're not really telling you here. I don't see it. See, I know in Medium that they are people that are these spiritists. You know, they call them mediums. It's funny how we don't see any of that here. It's kind of like been covered up or something. I'm trying to find it. You know what a medium is. I'm just trying to see. Funny how they don't have it here. It just sort of has disappeared. But we know that that's what a medium is. A spiritist, you know, people. Yes, here you go. Here's one of them. A person who claims to receive messages from people who are dead. Necromancy. A medium. You know, like we were reading in Fritz Springmeier's book about the Watchtower Society. You know what I mean? Rutherford, remember? Amazing. Anyway, you get it. So they kind of like, you know, glossed over that and glazed over that. So we don't see that meaning right now. I guess you have to look into an older dictionary to get the proper things. Let's continue. Stuart Chase, when he lectured before the Society Town Hall audiences, was advertised as an economist, quote-unquote, and author, not as a socialist propagandist and former associate of the Berkman anarchist gang. Scott Nearing, the communist mouthpiece of Moscow, is also referred to in the press as a lecturer and economist, quote-unquote. Isn't that a very interesting way of going about it? They call somebody an economist, so you're interested in here. Well, he's going to talk about the economy? When really it's propaganda. In the press notices announcing Horace Bridges as the speaker for a North Shore audience, his connection with the Ethical Society was emphasized, but no mention made of his connection with the Communist Aiding American Civil Liberties Union. Communist Aiding American Civil Liberties Union. Communist Aiding ACLU. He is on the Chicago committee, which has been pushing suits against the city of Melrose Park because its police, when attacked and defied by communist rioters, were forced to uphold the law in order to use guns. If these suits are successful, no one will be safe, for naturally the police will not dare to interfere with communist agitators. Hello? Did you hear that? There's suits, lawyers, Jews, right? Against the place down there because they don't want the cops to use guns. So basically they want the cops to stand down is what they're saying. So it says, if these suits are successful, no one will be safe, for naturally the police will not dare to interfere with communist agitators. Isn't that what's going on right now? Funny how this stuff is, huh? Gandhi, the queer. Vithal Bhai J. Patel, speaker at the Wilmette Sunday Evening Club and Union League Club of Chicago last year, was the Gandhi aide released from jail and welcomed out of India. He was the house guest while in Chicago of Herbert J. Friedman, who is on the executive board of the Chicago Civil Liberties Committee. Patel was listed in the Communist Moscow News of August 30th, 1932, as the delegate for India to the Communist World Congress Against War, quote-unquote, which convened in Amsterdam in August 1932. The Surrender of an Empire by Nesta Webster, published by Boswell, has bits like this. In 1928, the Bardoli No Tax Campaign was carried out by Vithabhai Patel. This agitation, though ostensibly industrial, was directly inspired by communist agents. Meanwhile, money had been sent continually from Moscow to the strike leaders. In May, it was publicly announced that 1,575 had been sent. In August, a sum of 5,500. On September 5th, 1,000 from Moscow. The statesman confessed itself puzzled as to the policy of the British government in allowing Soviet Russia to remit these sums through British banks in order to foment agitation. In March, Pravda, Moscow official paper, had declared that the battles in India are now part of the world revolution, led, organized, and watched over by the Communist Internationale. I hope you're listening. In July, it devoted 8 columns to an analysis of the position in India, showing that Moscow was not only heavily subsidized by the revolutionary movement there, but maintaining its own spies and agents and again admitting that it was out to destroy British power in India. The British government sent an appeal to the Indian people saying the government and the viceroy were in entire accord with Indian desire for self-government. Gandhi, nationalist leader, replied, demanding a conference. The violent elements in the nationalist camp replied more forcibly by placing a bomb on the rails outside of Delhi, with the object of blowing up the viceroy's train, which was carrying him, on December 23rd, to a meeting with Gandhi and other nationalist leaders. The plot, however, failed in its effect. 1930, savage rioting broke out in Calcutta, a raid accompanied by the murder of British officials in every form of violence was made on the armories of Chittagong. Loyal Indian police were massacred and burned by the brutal mobs at Sholapur. The Afridis descended from the hills and Peshawar burst into flame. As Gandhi peacefully observed to the Times correspondent, nonviolent and violent movements always go hand in hand. Very interesting, huh? Nonviolent and violent movements always go hand in hand. Then and then only, when India was in a blaze from end to end, the viceroy took alarm and resolved on firmer action. On May 5th, Gandhi was arrested. His successors to the leadership, the aged Abbas Tiabji and Mrs. Naidu, then Pandit Motilal Nehru and Vitalbhai Patel followed him into imprisonment later. Well, I'm going to move forward a little bit here, because I'm about as interested in street poopers as I am in Negroes. Einstein. One of the best press-agented men in the world is Albert Einstein, who dares to tell the smart professors that his relativity theory is so far beyond their intelligence that they cannot understand it and gets away with it. They know, sure enough, that they cannot understand it, but evidently figure that the best thing to do is to keep quiet and leave him undisturbed on his self-erected scientific throne, lest perchance his theory might be found to have some basis someday, in which event they would be classed as ignoramuses for having doubted it in the first place. Fellow workers in the Red Movement are glad, of course, to magnify Einstein's importance in order to point out with pride that the greatest, most ununderstandable scientist in the world is one of their number. In other words, a Jew. A dirty, filthy Jew. Fellow workers in the Red Movement are glad. Yes, they are. Dr. Nikola Tesla takes sharp issue with Einstein, saying, "The Einstein theory in many respects is erroneous." Charles Lane Poor, PhD, professor of celestial mechanics at Columbia University, states, "The supposed astronomical proofs of the theory as cited and claimed by Einstein do not exist." Professor Thomas Jefferson, C., a distinguished scientist, a scientific authority, says, "Einstein is neither astronomer, mathematician, nor physicist. He is a confusionist." And who is the author of confusion? His father, the devil. The Einstein theory is a fallacy. The theory that either does not exist and that gravity is not a force but a property of space can only be described as a crazy vagary, a disgrace to our age. Professor Dayton C. Miller lectured before the Western Society of Engineers on his experiments in complete refutation of the Einstein theory. Einstein is one of the biggest frauds. Perhaps the most exhaustive treatise on the Einstein theories is the volume entitled The Case Against Einstein, written by Dr. Arthur Lynch, a very eminent English scientist. While much of his treatise is a technical analysis of the mathematical and philosophical fallacies of Einsteinism, from a scientific standpoint, part of it is of interest to the layman. Dr. Lynch cites such critics of Einstein as the noted mathematicians M. Picard, Henri Poincaré, perhaps the most celebrated of his race since Cauchy, Dr. Darboux, who received the Nobel Prize for Mathematics, M. Paul Painlevy, Leroux, the German Klein, the Italians Ricci, and Levi Civita, who have done most to develop the mathematical instrument used by the relativists, and who reject relativity, and the American framers of the case, which is the cornerstone of the theory. The Michelson-Morley experiment, Michelson rejected the relativist theory. Dr. Lynch analyzes Einstein's popular vogue and says, "Yet as I cast my eye over the whole course of science, I behold instances of false science, even more pretentious and popular than that of Einstein, gradually fading into ineptitude under the searchlight. And I have no doubt that there will also arise a new generation who will look with a wonder and amazement deeper than now accompany Einstein at our galaxy of thinkers, men of science, popular critics, authoritative professors, and witty dramatists who have been satisfied to waive their common sense in view of Einstein's absurdities. Personally, I shall not forget the merry evening my husband and I spent at the University Roundtable lecture devoted to the Einstein theory. As our instructor diagrammed space-time as a circle and envisioned us meeting ourselves as infants again coming around the circle of time, and demonstrated the speed of a locomotive as its beams of light in accordance with relativity and in contradiction to all accepted mathematical rules, we all, including the instructor who admitted he could not understand it himself, howled with glee. We felt as though we had spent an evening in a mental madhouse. Well, that's what anything a Jew does is, ladies and gentlemen. While I am unable to understand the scientific value of the relativity theory, I can understand the relativity, quote-unquote, of Einstein to his daughter, who married a Russian and lived in Russia following her marriage. I can also see the relativity of the atheist book he endorses and of the down with war, up with revolution, pacifism of the War Resisters International, of which he is a leader. To the Communist Congress at Moscow, which he attended, he appears in a photograph published by the Better America Federation. Communist, right? And the relativity of the Communist Workers International Relief, which he sponsors. Now, again, this Einstein's daughter, she's a Jew, and she married a Russian who's a communist. But I thought they had to stay in their own race. I always say that, you know that. So, the Communist Congresses, he sponsors the Communist Congresses Against War and is in favor of Red Revolution. See his Who's Who, which he has helped to assemble in the Communist International Committee for Struggle Against War, upon which he serves, 1933, with Maxim Gorky, Romain Rolland, Henri Barbusse, etc., Moscow's world leaders for bloody communist revolution, atheism, pacifism for capitalist countries, and militarism for Russia and communist principles. There again, right? the social cataclysm of Albert Pike. Atheism, pacifism, communism, Luciferianism, you know what I mean? The League of Nations Chronicle, published in Chicago, March 1931, reporting Einstein's address to 400 peace, quote-unquote, advocates in Chicago, said, "No one mentioned relativity. Militant opposition to militarism and his keynote. It is my conviction that the only way is actual refusal of military service," he said. "What I propose is illegal, but whenever a government demands criminal actions from its citizens, they have the very right to oppose it, and we must uphold them." In his speech to the War Resisters Conference at Lyon, France, he not only urged defiance of the government authority, which requires citizens to bear arms in defense of their government, but also said, "I have authorized the establishment of Einstein's War Resisters Fund. Contributions should be sent to the treasurer of the WRI, 1111 Abbey Road, Anfield, Middlesex, England. This fund is for the defense of militant war resisters." The Patriot, quote-unquote, of London, November 30th, 1933, said, "It is reported from Berlin that the entire seized property of Professor Einstein and his wife has been confiscated under the law regarding the seizure of property of communists. When Hitler started his campaign against communists and Einstein's Jewish relatives, Einstein demonstrated his relativity theory in a perfectly understandable way by reversing his pacifist position and urging Belgian war resisters to go to war against Germany. When the Woman Patriot Society tried in 1932 to bar Einstein from entering the United States, the whole company of red intellectuals rose up in wrath. Jane Addams, WILPF, sent a message criticizing the American consul for even questioning the idol Einstein, the idol. Get it? Jewish worship. We see a lot of Jewish worship in the world today, don't we? It's in many forms. And we see Baal worship too, which is their father. Not only do they worship the father, but they worship his literal offspring, the Jews. You see this everywhere, all the time. Yet legally, Einstein's membership in only one of these communist organizations was sufficient to exclude him from admission to the United States. The United States Immigration Act of February 5th, 1917 requires that the following classes of aliens shall be excluded from admission into the United States: anarchists or persons who believe in or advocate the overthrow by force or violence of the government of the United States, or who disbelieve in or opposed to the organized government, or who are members of or affiliated with any organization entertaining and teaching disbelief in or opposition to organized government. What a crock of crap that is, huh? All the people they're bringing in here are the exact opposite of that. Right? The giving, loaning, or promising of money or anything of value to be used for the advising, advocacy, or teaching of any doctrine above shall constitute the advising, advocacy, and teaching of such doctrine, etc. Nor is it necessary to prove that he had knowledge of the contents of the programs or any one of them. It is sufficient if the evidence showed up that he was a member of or affiliated with such an organization as contemplated by the statute. Case of Kajar versus Doak, page 6. The Supreme Court of Pennsylvania, in the Robert F. Clark case, 301 Pennsylvania 321, held, "Anarchy will stalk in unmolested if individuals, because of superior education, age, or mental reservation, are to be permitted to resist or to modify the laws of Congress according to their own individual beliefs." That was a naturalization case where the fundamental principle of the United States Constitution, namely the power of the government to defend its existence and enforce its laws by force of arms, was at issue. The program of Einstein's War Resisters International, which was actually affiliated with at least three anarchist communist societies, is in entire conformity with the teachings of Karl Marx as quoted by Lenin, not merely to hand on from one set of hands to another the bureaucratic and military machine, but to shatter it. And it is this that the preliminary condition of any real people's revolution. Jane Addams. I don't know if this is interesting to you or not, but it's important to realize the connections between Jews and communism. I mean, Einstein, I saw him in a picture wearing women's shoes. He was mentally ill, sticking his tongue out, which is devilish. You could tell he was really mentally ill. He's a fraud, a criminal. He stole the information. He worked in the patent office, and he stole it, like Jews always do. But you see that he was also actively helping the communist movement. And so that's kind of important. Greatly beloved because of her kindly intentions toward the poor, Jane Addams has been able to do more probably than any other living woman, as she tells in her own books, to popularize pacifism and to introduce radicalism into colleges, settlements, and respectable circles. The influence of her radical protégés, who consider Hull House their home center, reaches out all over the world. One knowing of her consistent aid of the Red Movement can only marvel at the smooth and charming way she, at the time, disguises this aid and reigns as queen on both sides of the fence. I was impressed with her charm and ability and subterfuge. At my only meeting with her, which was at a legislative hearing held in Chicago City Hall, May 29, 1933. She was there to testify against the passage of the Baker Bills, Baker, Jew name B, again, which aimed only at penalizing the seditious communistic teaching of overthrow of this government in Illinois colleges. One would not have believed any person wishing to appear decent law-abiding could have objected to these bills, which easily passed the Senate. But the vehement fight of the college presidents, Hutchins, Scott, McClellan, and McGuire of St. Viator's, put up against them at the first hearing in Springfield, was in itself a revelation. At the second hearing in Chicago, in reply to a gentleman's testimony concerning Professor Lovett's revolutionary speeches, Miss Addams, and it's like the Addams family, two D's, you see, like Adder. Addams is often a Jew name. I wouldn't say it's all the time, but it is often. Miss Addams, after pleading for freedom to teach socialism and communism in schools, because these are world movements, she said, was sure Professor Lovett, who lives at Hull House, had never advocated the overthrow of this government by force and violence. In fact, she said, I don't believe I've ever heard of any member of the Communist Party doing so. Bull crap. Of course, you all know that I am a pacifist and would not advocate the overthrow of anything by force and violence. Oh, no. Lovett writes the introduction of Recovery Through Revolution. I rose to remark that communists do advocate such overthrow, as she should know, since she had been associated with enough of them. Reminding her that she had spoken only in December on the same program with communist Scott Nearing at the Student Congress Against War at the University of Chicago. She started to deny this, but I held up the program of the Congress with her name on it. Then she said, but Professor Nearing is not a member of the party anymore. I replied, he is lecturing under the auspices of the Friends of the Soviet Union and for the benefit of the Communist Chicago Workers' School of Revolution at 2822 South Michigan Ave. Oh, I didn't know, she murmured. I had the announcement card with me. During his hearing, Carl Hassler of the same School of Revolution sat taking notes, probably for his Communist Federated Press, and when it adjourned, he came along with Jane Addams as she magnanimously sought me out, her enemy, to introduce herself. Graciously, she said, "I don't believe we've ever met, Miss Dilling. I am Miss Addams." We shook hands, and I said, "I believe you have a very kind heart for the poor, Miss Addams. But why is it you have been helping the communist movement all these years? Communism only pulls people down." "That's correct." She said, "I am not a member of the Communist Party." "No, of course not," said I. "You can do so much more good from the outside. But you have belonged to every outstanding Red Aid Society from the American Civil Liberties Union, with its terrible record for aid and sedition, down to this last National Religion and Labor Foundation, which uses atheist Soviet cartoons and talks plain revolution." She said, "I make no apology for my connection with the Civil Liberties Union. It was quite necessary during the war. But what is this National Religion and Labor Foundation you mentioned?" I dug down into my briefcase and drew out its letterhead and pointed to her name on its national committee. Mildly, she professed to know nothing about it. And her woman companion, at her request, copied off the address, presumably to chide out the organization for using her name. Only a few weeks later, July 21st, the Chicago Daily News carried the story of a radical strike in which three patrol wagons full of strike pickets were arrested for hurling missiles at returning workers and the police, and stated that, see, now this is back in 36. You know what I'm trying to say to you? Has anything changed? What you're seeing today is the same communist revolution as it was then. Hurling missiles at returning workers and the police, and stated that Lee Taylor of Chicago Commons, who had also testified against the Baker bills at the time at the same hearing, Carl Borders of Chicago Commons, and Annetta Dickman of the Chicago YWCA, along with Francis Henson, Victor Brown, Norman Sibley, and Ralph Barker, four delegates to the National Conference of the National Religion and Labor Foundation, then being held at Hull House, had joined the picket lines. So after discovering her membership and making inquiries, Miss Addams must evidently have approved of the National Religion and Labor Foundation sufficiently to sanction its convention at Hull House. Newspaper photographers approached asking to take our pictures as Miss Addams stood talking with me after the hearing, with Carl Hassler grinning like a little Cheshire cat at her side. He had written me up in his Communist Federated Press. See, again, there's your proof. Communist means federated or federal or federalism or federation. It's all to do federal. It's all to do with communism. The federal government means the communist government. That's what it means. To the photographers, Miss Addams said, "If Miss Dilling is broad-minded enough to have her picture taken with me, you may take it, providing you will call the picture 2DARs. And to me, you know I also am a DAR. But before a Hassler Addams Dilling photo could be snapped, then and there, I truthfully spoke up and said, I am not a DAR, I am sorry to say, which upset her plan. Roland Libinati, chairman of the legislative committee holding the hearings, was impressed, no doubt, by the array of talent, such as college presidents and Jane Addams, which opposed the Baker bills and favored freedom for communistic teaching in our schools. This is back in 33. Communistic teachings. This is before I'm born. Living as he does within a block of Hull House, he must also realize the influence Jane Addams wields in his political district. At any rate, the bills were killed, as he then intimated to reporters that they would be. Miss Addams wields great influence also at the Chicago Woman's Club, where the Communist Chicago Workers' Theater play Precedent was given in May 1933. Its February 1934 play was presented at Hull House. The Communist Daily Worker, Saturday, October 21st, 1933, said, "Today the John Reed Club will hold a banquet for Henri Barbeau at the Chicago Woman's Club, 72 East 11th Street." 72 is 9, East 11, 9-11. 72 East 11th Street. Jane Addams, internationally known social worker, get it? Winner of the Nobel Peace Prize and head of the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. What a lie, these filthy, dirty Jews. Writes that although illness will prevent her from attending the mass meeting, she expects to be present at the banquet and is anxious to meet Mr. Barbeau. B.K. Gibert, district organizer of the Communist Party, and Herbert Newton, editor of the Workers' Voice, are also scheduled to speak at the banquet. Barbeau, now that's a French name, B-A-R-B-U-S-S-E. Now, I don't know if you say Barbeau or Barbouche. That he will be accompanied by Joseph Freeman, hello, editor of the New Masses, and Professor H.W.L. Dana, noted author. See who's who. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're getting some education here. This is page 55. We're getting some education here on some things that are important. You may not be so interested in what I'm talking about here or what she's talking about, but we've made some connections here with Einstein and so on and so forth. We've seen that Chicago is a hub for communism back in 1936. What do you think it is now? We've seen that this goes along with the racial program for the 21st century by Israel Cohen and by Pike's letter to Mazzini with the Third World War. We see it all linked on right on up into this. So they're pushing communism on the children in schools. This is what they're doing. And you see, just because these Baker bills, Baker, another Jew name, right? Oh, but I know somebody named Baker that's not a Jew. And what about Jim Baker? He spells his name B-A-K-K-E-R, like nigger is Niger with an extra G, right? That's a serpent. Jim Baker is a serpent. You can see the demon living right in him. It's actually probably more than one demon, several demons. You can see it. I could see it years ago. With the dirty smirk on his face and the wide mouth that he has. That's not a white man. It's a filthy, dirty Jew. And it's amazing that anyone would have given to such a thing. You look at Tammy Faye Baker. I mean, this thing is, I don't know what it is. It's like a pretend white woman. It's not a white woman. It's a pretend white woman, and it's very ugly, and I bet it stinks, too. At the end of the Rabbit Hole radio show, I usually give a good piece of advice, and that is, don't go down the wrong hole.
Belonged, you see, they never want
Sydney. The curse is laid upon my race. Useless serpents, they bring disgrace. A man without a face. Time they pass again. It's so hard to tell where and when. Yeah, just do the best you can. The flames will burn away the waste. All the lies that they told erased. A man without a face. A man without a face.